Trump is crazy for us, let's be honest. That's that building that $1 billion, 2,000 jobs in Michigan, Illinois, and Illinois, Mexico. They cannot go to the U.S. They can't go to the U.S. It's not my fault.
Well, 6:06, good morning. It is, of course, Kelly here. And on the 10th day of January, we've got a giant number of stories for you here. One of the most, startling pictures is the amount of flooding that's going on in the state of California. And I had talked to my sister yesterday. She told me that texted me at one point and said that they had closed Yosemite because there was some sort of a wall of water that was supposed to be heading through that valley. And then numerous other stories about the rain and flooding and mudslides and related weather effects. So anyway, I've got a little bit of that for you here. Here's one story from CNN.
What's being referred to as a once-in-a-decade storm is causing flood warnings, mudslides, wreaking havoc, to say the very least. We know at least four people have died in California as a result of these storms. Storms coming one after another. And we're told they may not let up until later this week. More than 1,000 homes and 1,300 in Reno, Nevada have been evacuated due to flooding threats. According to officials, Interstate 80 in Reno also closed because of a large mudslide. The mud and rock covering a huge section of that road. In some places, the mud as deep as 7 feet. In California, a giant sequoia that has stood for centuries has fallen. Tough not to remember this picture. You don't have to have visited the so-called tunnel tree to know of it. Officials say all of the rain may be the cause. Look at that. It was known as the Pioneer Cabin Tree or the Tunnel Tree. Reportedly, it was hollowed out in the 1880s, so tourists could go through it.
And so these storms are depositing enormous amounts of snow up in the Sierra Nevadas, and I would think that the drought is pretty much going to be over after this, because we've had a couple of years of quite a bit of rain coming in. But here's something from ABC News.
Pictures of the horrible flooding out west, and Rob Marciano is in the middle of it all in San Jose, California. Good morning, Rob. And Rob, what's going on out there?
Hey, Michael. Well, we had about a 12-hour break, but now the rain has picked up again, and the river here in San Jose, one of many creeks and rivers across this part of the state that rise and fall with each one of these water-packed storms that rolls off the Pacific.
Overnight, homes and businesses underwater in Sonoma County, California. This building used to house a mini golf and arcade. Heavy rains here causing the Russian River to crest up to 35 feet.
Really the last time that there were significant floods like this were more than a decade ago.
At least 3,000 evacuated.
The water gets in the house. That's about it. That's all I'm worried about.
Up in the hills of Guerneville, a mudslide 50 feet wide crashing through this man's home.
We're right at the edge and we're holding out until it takes us over.
And near Santa Cruz, a dangerous slide trapped and injured a photographer from our San Francisco station, KGO, inside his news van, partially crushing the vehicle, surrounding him with live wires and debris.
Another slide, this one in Napa County, and it hasn't even rained that much today, but you've got rugged terrain and this sandstone, which is brittle stuff, plus a foot of rain, it's going to come crashing down.
In Gardena, a dramatic rescue. Two women pulled from the surging San Gabriel River after they were swept from the riverbank into the water. And in Colorado, heavy winds causing dangerous driving conditions. Dust and debris blowing across the highway causing near blackout conditions. Semi-truck after semi-truck falling over like dominoes. The back wheels of this one lifting right off the road.
These storms are certainly packing a punch with the wind as well, but we're most concerned about the water. Now we have two more that are rolling in, and Ginger Z is tracking all that. Back in studio. Good morning, Ginger.
Rob, thank you so much for showing us all that. But you have to see those storms. The first one from the weekend now made its way into the Midwest and Great Lakes, moving through with some winter weather. But the storm that's coming in this afternoon and evening for the West Coast is the next one we're most concerned about. The High Sierra and the blizzard warning. Some of the wind gusts up to 60 miles per hour. The flood watches for up to a half foot of rain on what has already fallen. So you can see the Russian River in the heart of Sonoma County could go to 37 and a half feet. Quick look at how much rain will fall, mudslides. And right here in the Northeast, we're going to warm up. So no more skiing on the beach. All right? This is not happening as of the midweek. I'll tell you in just a couple of moments.
All right, Ginger, thank you.
And there's just a lot of various places in California that are being flooded right now, and into Reno, into the Sierra Nevadas are getting feet upon feet. My sister said she heard locally, perhaps up to 10 feet of snow in some places. And it had been warm when these storms came in, and now the temperature is falling. And so as the temperature falls, and hopefully the temperature will remain down there, but here's a little bit more on some of the blizzard conditions.
It just keeps on coming in for California and Nevada, where storms have killed at least four people. 550 homes and businesses in Sonoma County, California, are in the path of the rising Russian River. And in Nevada, at least 400 homes were evacuated in a neighborhood of South Reno. That's where the Truckee River breached its banks, and that closed a lot of roads in the area. This has been a big story over the last couple of days. The Truckee River will probably continue to be a story as well. In Northern California, flooded roads left a lot of drivers stranded. People were rescued from their cars in Marin and Sonoma counties. We had parts of I-80 that were closed by a mudslide and some downed power lines. And get this, there was a wind gust of 173 miles an hour recorded up in the Sierra. We've had three fatalities that were connected to hazardous road conditions in California. One of those involved a man whose car veered into a creek in Marin County.
And my sister had told me also about the gust of 173 miles an hour, which is really stronger than you would get in a lot of hurricanes. Yeah, here's just a little bit more.
So much rain in California over the last couple of weeks, and we have more on tap for the next week or so. And the problem is, this rain in the short term, it's been making a lot of the rivers rise. That's been causing a lot of huge problems. We've had flash flooding, we've had river flooding, and I know it sounds crazy because we've got the drought going on. The idea that I could be sitting here saying all this rain is a bad thing, but yes, it is in the short term. In the long term, yes, it's going to help the drought. And the thing that's really going to help the drought is all this snow that is just piling up on the mountaintops as we speak, and it's going to continue to do so over the next couple of days. But just rain pretty much nonstop, at least on and off, for the next couple of days. Today, Wednesday, Thursday. It doesn't really dry out until we get to Friday, so we'll continue to have some problems there. Look at this, liquid equivalent precipitation. So everything you see west of the mountains here, this will be rain, about 2 to 3 inches in a lot of spots. And keep in mind, these are generalized totals that we're forecasting. If you get caught under one nasty thunderstorm, could end up like, you know, 3 to 4 inches in a couple of hours. That would cause flash flooding. Look how much snow we're expecting in the high terrain, several feet through Friday.
And one more little story here for you. Here is just some of the areas in California.
We just had a consistent stream of moisture that has been pouring into California over the last several weeks, just storm after storm after storm. And look, it is the wet season. There's been a lot of rain. There's been a lot of snow. But, of course, it's caused a lot of problems. And, you know, with the big-time drought that we've got going on in California, you wouldn't think that I'd be talking about all this moisture pouring into California as a bad thing. But the problem is, when you get a lot of rain in a small amount of time, really there's no way out of this drought without getting some flooding first. This is always how it goes in these situations. So we've got a lot of flash flood watches, flash flood warnings at times, flood warnings, flood watches out in parts of Central California especially. And actually, this is really the part of California where the drought is the worst. So overall, yes, in the long term, it's a good thing. But you see, it's just on and off rain and snow all the way through at least Thursday before Friday. We finally start to catch a little bit of a break. This is the liquid equivalent precipitation we're expecting. This is going to be a lot of snow up in the Sierra. You see that 1 to 2 inches, maybe 2 to 3 inches of rain apart from that in some other spots. Look at all that snow, though. That's going to translate to several feet in the high terrain.
And one of the things that was explained to me was that the state during this drought had taken out so much of the groundwater that the ground had fallen about 5 feet in some places. And so when the water comes down to refill those water tables and the aquifers, there's just not the room that there used to be down there because the ground has compacted. So that's one of the issues that they're dealing with. And it's kind of an amazing thing to witness, and the same thing had happened in Texas, where there was a 5-year drought, which had even impacted to a great extent. The amount of water that had come into Texas was unprecedented, and it's probably going to be here as well. We'll take a little break here. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 617. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. And listening this week to Dr. John. He's got a very, very colorful past. Was a guitarist and ended up in a shooting, and which severed I won't go into all the details, but he injured his hand in a shooting. So ironically went from guitar to playing piano, and is considered by a lot of people certainly one of the great blues pianists alive today. 617 AM Las Cruces. We'll be back. All right, so you may have heard about the statement that Miss Meryl Streep said at the, I think it was the Golden Globes, where she earned some sort of a Lifetime Achievement Award. But I think symbolic of the attitude in the media of these people who are totally opposed to Trump. And, you know, what I find strange about this and kind of disappointing is how one-sided these people are. There's, you know, one version of truth. There's one version of good life. And I think they've been spoiled by Obama being in office. And, you know, generally speaking, Obama was not criticized by the mainstream media, even when he made spectacular failures, such as when the Obamacare rolled out. If you recall, the website didn't work. This kind of symbolic, a novelist calls foreshadowing. And one after another state, Obamacare exchanges failed, which showed, you know, in some states, didn't put a lot of money into it. Other states poured hundreds of millions of dollars into these state exchanges, and basically they've all fallen, which means that you've got a business model that is not viable. And so all of the different things that Obama did, or his administration, whoever was calling the shots there, I guess you won't find out until sometime in the future when someone does an honest job of research or reporting. But, you know, and one of the things, I just mentioned this to you, you know, Obama is very concerned about his legacy. And at one point had said that he was the fourth greatest president. And I think, wasn't that in his first term, which was kind of a surreal moment. But he's, you know, he's very caught up in his legacy. And, you know, here's another, not to go off on a couple of tangents here, but it's funny. On the one hand, you do things that are destructive to Republicanism or the democracy or capitalism, whatever. You do things that are harmful, like Obamacare, and like a lot of regulations. And then on the other hand, you want to make sure that you've got a legacy. Well, if you're doing things like Harry Reid was, or Pelosi or Obama, that were harmful to America, the obstructionism that Harry Reid did, for example, blocking hundreds and hundreds of bills out of the House to keep them from ever coming to see the light of day in the Senate, and then blaming the Republicans for obstructionism. If you talk to Harry Reid, if you talk to Pelosi, if you talk to Obama, I think you would probably find it to be a confusing and even disorienting process, because I don't know if what they were doing was clear in their own minds. They wanted to bring in, they wanted to auger in some level of globalism. If you got them, you know, got them a couple of beers off on a side room, no cameras, no cell phones, they might admit that they have their own religion, and the religion is globalism, of some variation of socialism. But, you know, the president is very, very, very concerned about his legacy. And so my question would be, if you were that concerned, why weren't you more engaged in stuff? Why didn't you, getting back to the original point, he gets up, he goes to the Hill to deal with Congress, to deal with the Senate, and the trying to get these people to stand up for his legacy and fight for it. And they said, you know, one of the things Michael Barone pointed out is that Obama has always been very weak on policy details, which says to me he doesn't understand the policy that it would take to achieve what he wanted, number one. And number two, he's either lazy or indifferent as to the actual work of doing legislation, which is why Pelosi put together the stimulus. And Harry Reid and Pelosi were involved, but I guess especially Pelosi was involved in Obamacare, and you've got one disaster after another. So now he's getting up to fight. He's going to dedicate the rest of his life to this kind of a community activist idea of national politics. I find it so strange, though, and it's a sad thing with all of his talent, that he didn't turn towards a more robust defense of America and a building of our economy and protecting our rights. Here's Obama claiming to be the fourth best president ever.
The issue here is not going to be a list of accomplishments. As you said yourself, Steve, I would put our legislative and foreign policy accomplishments in our first 2 years against any president, with the possible exceptions of Johnson, FDR, and Lincoln. But, just in terms of what we've gotten done in modern history.
So I don't think anybody is going to say that. Anyway, here's a little bit from Meryl Streep attacking Trump.
This year that stunned me. It sank its hooks in my heart. Not because it was good. There's nothing good about it. But it was effective and it did its job. It made its intended audience laugh and show their teeth. It was that moment when the person asking to sit in the most respected seat in our country imitated a disabled reporter, someone he outranked in privilege, power, and the capacity to fight back. It kind of broke my heart when I saw it, and I still can't get it out of my head because it wasn't in a movie. It was real life.
Does anybody really care what Meryl Streep thinks? That isn't not... You know, Anyway, I've got for you here, we'll get on to the next hour, the next half of an hour, get on to some of the details of the of what's going on for confirmations. But here is the end of the Electoral College debate. Here is Joe Biden and with a protester at the last moment trying to stop Trump.
What purpose does the gentlewoman rise?
Mr. President, I object to the certificate from the state of Georgia on the grounds that the electoral votes were
not... There's no debate. Section 15 and 17 of Title III of the United States Code require that any objection be presented in writing, signed by both a member of the House of Representatives and a senator. Is the objection in writing and not only signed by the member, but by a United States senator?
Mr. President, even as people waited hours in Georgia...
There's no debate, and if there's not signed by a senator... The objection cannot be entertained.
Mr. President, the objection is signed by a member of the House, but not yet by a member of the Senate. Well,
it is over.
That's the end of the line for Never Trump. And so he's been ratified by the Electoral College through the House and the Senate. Now here's Joe Biden saying God save the Queen at the end of it.
The purpose of this joint session having been concluded pursuant to the Senate concurrent resolution 2 of the 115th Congress, the chair declares the joint session dissolved.
All right, so we'll take another segue here, and we'll deal with a little bit the issue of the never Trumpers, the dead enders, the permanent overclass, I guess you would call them. There's an underclass and there's an overclass. The permanent class of elites who've decided that Trump is the next Hitler. You know, these people are fascists in that they don't want the democracy, the democratic process to mean anything. 6:32, we'll be right back. 523-1450, and got a little bit of local news for you. All right, let me get you some headlines here. Jeff Sessions from Alabama, senator from Alabama, to be grilled on race and first of hearings. And what they've done is put a lot of these hearings together at the same time, and which is typical, but the Democrats are going to claim that they've done it to keep them from protesting the nominees, although I don't remember the Republicans complaining about Obama for that. Senator Booker is going to testify against Jeff Sessions. Yet the Democrats are helpless to stop, and the reason for that is because of a rule that was brought in by Harry Reid, of all people. Harry Reid is undoubtedly going to go down as one of the most partisan, if not the most biased individuals to ever lead the Senate. And what did all the bias and the bad blood and the personal insults, the attacks, achieved for the Democrats? He was a very nasty guy, really. And what did it achieve for the Democrats? I would argue that it achieved the opposite of what they really wanted. It got him a lot of bad ill will with his colleagues, and also developed a reputation with the American people of being one nasty hombre, to quote Donald Trump, I guess. All right. Clouds of tiny flying machines. The Pentagon is successfully testing micro drones. Small business optimism surging the most since 1980, before Reagan went in. Chicago and New York City, the worst financial shape among large cities, and Los Angeles needs to borrow millions of dollars just to cover legal payouts. Man gets a $128 ticket for heating up his car in his own driveway. Global warming. Study: revenge is sweet, mood-enhancing effect. Don't turn your back on revenge, friends. Top Russian diplomat found dead in Athens apartment. No evidence of break-in. A slaughter that was absolutely shocking occurred in a Brazilian prison as a gang war exploded, and I saw a picture of it, and it was just a pile of body parts. It was absolutely surreal. Homeless people being swept away by the flooding in California. Wow, that's amazing. And publishers encounter political storms in turn to the right. Raised for meat in South Korea, dogs headed for new homes in the United States. Heartwarming. Instead of belly warm. Okay, so we do have rounds coming up of these confirmation sessions, and it's going to be shocking. It is going to be shocking because I believe for the far left is not going to be able to stomach it. I mean, they've been in the driver's seat for so long. So, you know, I think it's going to be hard to take. I do have for you a little clip, though, of the glory days of Obama when everybody thought he was the greatest candidate in American history. It would appear, and there were people that were writing, as I recall, articles about Obama, putting him on the same level as Julius Caesar and Alexander the Great and George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, before he had even done anything. And I think the idea was this person was so smart and so well-meaning that his legacy, his decision-making as president was going to be absolutely breathtaking. And it has been, but in the opposite direction. And there's an article that just came out in which Obama is stating, "Don't blame me for the destruction of the Democratic Party, not my fault." Here's a little of the original breathless anticipation and reception of Barack.
You can see it in the crowd. The thrill, the hope. How they surge toward him. You are looking at an American political phenomenon.
You know, you are the equivalent of a rock star in politics.
Right.
Many people afterwards, they weren't sure how to pronounce your name, but they were moved by you. People were crying. You tapped into something. You touched people.
I have to tell you, you know, it's part of reporting this case, of this election. The feeling most people get when they hear a Barack Obama speech, I felt this thrill going up my leg. I mean, I don't have that too often.
Steady.
No, seriously. It's a dramatic event. He speaks about America in a way that has nothing to do with politics. It has to do with the feeling we have about our country. And that is an objective assessment.
On the bus ride along the snowy road to Lebanon, New Hampshire, I showed him this week's Newsweek hot off the presses.
How does this feel of all the honors that have come your way, all the publicity? Who's it make you think of? Is there a loved one?
I like to say that in some ways, Barack Obama is the first president since George Washington to be taking a step down into the Oval Office. I mean, from visionary leader of a giant movement, now he's got an executive position that he has to perform in.
Really, a lot of people, I mean, people from all over the world, frankly, say to me, here comes a president with a huge mandate, a huge reservoir of goodwill, huge promises to change. And with all of that, his popularity is down. People don't appreciate some of the amazing legislative agenda that he's accomplished.
When you watch the president like that, I always feel he's got so many pluses, hasn't he? I mean, in a sense, he's personable, he's handsome, he can be funny. You know, abroad, he has his great image for America. A lot of things are just perfect about Barack Obama. This guy's done everything right. He's raised his family right. He's fought his way all the way to the top of the Harvard Law Review in a blind test, becomes head of the review, the top editor there. Everything he's done is clean as a whistle. He's never not only broken any law, he's never done anything wrong. He's the perfect father, the perfect husband, the perfect American. And all they do is trash the guy.
The fact that this country didn't fall into a depression, an economic depression, which it could easily have done. The fact that we are out of Iraq for all the problems in Iraq, getting there in Afghanistan, the auto industry saved, gay rights more and more insured, not without help from the President of the United States. The fact that there's been no scandal, major scandal in this administration, which is a rare thing in an administration. The fact that science is now discussed as science. The fact that climate change, however woefully inadequate the measures for it, is now
measure up to greatness for you?
Well, let's wait till the end. Let's wait till the end. A lot of things could go wrong, and
but all those
things
have already
right.
happened.
Well, I think those achievements are huge. Yes,
huge.
Yes.
We don't know if the Iran deal is going to work. If it does, it will be the major foreign policy achievement not only of this presidency but of this American generation. At which point, people in the not-too-distant future will look back at this presidency. They'll look back at this president, and they'll say, oh, of course they gave him the Nobel Peace Prize. Of course they did. That totally makes sense.
What's the sense of that? Is he one of our brightest presidents?
I think so.
Yes,
absolutely. I think so. And I think and it has the pluses and minuses
exactly
of that.
Exactly right. I'm asking from a real standpoint.
A key, you know, I think it's a keen analytical intelligence.
He passed that baton. He did it with such generosity, as I say, when he invoked the audacity of hope, all of the spirit, all of the creativity of his own brilliant speech writing. I don't think we've ever had a president save Lincoln, who is as great a speechwriter as this man.
President Obama is the most noble man who has ever lived in the White House, and he proved that again today.
That is amazing, isn't it? Absolutely amazing. And here, do not forget this.
Not bad.
Yeah, and I think even aside from the issue of electing the first African-American president and whatever one's partisan views, this is a guy whose IQ is off the charts. I mean, you cannot say that he is anything but a very serious and capable leader. And, you know, you and I have talked about this for years. You know,
well, what is his
IQ? System allows those people to become president. Those people meaning people that smart and that capable.
What is his IQ?
Pardon?
What is his IQ?
I would say I'd say he's probably the smartest guy ever to become president.
That's all I ask. I ask what his IQ was.
Yeah, well, that I don't know. I'd have to
meet
someone who has more expertise. What do you think it is?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, mine's 164. I don't know what that means, but that's a little higher than normal.
Well, it's way beyond genius, which does not surprise me.
It's surprising.
All right, so Obama, who was given every opportunity to succeed, has failed spectacularly. How do you explain that? 650, just my opinion, but But what are Obama's achievements? What are his successes? 523-1450, if you can think of one, I'll be waiting here for you. In the meantime, we'll take a little segue, a little break. 650, Kelly O'Connelly, I'm Las Cruces. It's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, this is Carlos.
Carlos, how you doing?
Good. So you solicited feedback on Obama's thing, and I would say that one of his...
Carlos, yes. Can you hear me? Hey, we're not on the air. You want to wait just a second to tell us, to tell everybody?
Sure.
How's everything going? How was your how were your holidays?
Oh, busy. Spent a lot of time with the kids and the wife, so I really enjoyed them.
Sounds like good times. Did you watch the Golden Globes when Meryl Streep went after the president?
No, I did not.
You're too busy.
Yeah, I was, like I said, just kind of a killing time, spending time with the kids playing outside, doing the abnormal things that I typically don't do.
I gotcha. Wow, it sounds great. Just got a second here. Oh, so what grade, just between you and I, would you give the president?
Well, I just, having seen, directly, and knowing a bunch of dreamers, I know that, most of the dreamers, and you know who I'm talking about when I talk about dreamers,
yeah.
Right?
Dream Act.
The kids from Mexico or were brought in by their parents from Mexico when they were babies or little kids. That's like a huge success.
Yeah.
And
no
I have
doubt.
Nephews and nieces that
took
advantage of that.
Carlos, just one second here. We're almost back on the air. Hold on one second. Hold on.
Are you sure?
Yeah, hold on one second. We're just about to come back on the air. Folks, we've got Carlos here, and Carlos has taken the invitation to call in and talk about President Obama's achievements. Carlos, good to have your phone call, and go ahead.
Well, Kelly, one of the things that I would say, or one of the successes that I would say, that or achievements that he did make, and that's based on what I have seen from a bunch of kids or babies that were brought in from Mexico by their parents and from other nations as well. But having nieces and nephews that were directly benefited from the DACA, the Dreamers, they were brought in by their parents illegally into the U.S. when they were babies. They didn't know anything, but they, all of a sudden now they know that they were illegally living in the U.S. and they benefited from that executive order from President Obama. And I would, if I asked these kids, I know that they will leak right away, tell me that that's a huge achievement. And I would want to see President-elect Trump to continue it, because these kids, they did not know that they were brought into the U.S. by their parents, but, they found themselves basically going to school here in the U.S. and illegally, and I think that executive order by President Obama was the right thing to do. I truly believe that, and like I say, directly having seen it, my nephews and nieces being benefited from that.
All right.
I would say that
okay.
That's a huge achievement.
Okay, that's a – now – I suspect these dreamers, a lot of them will probably end up staying in America. But let me ask you this. Obviously, Trump's not going to deport 11 million people. But let me ask you this. Give Obama a letter grade from your perspective on his 8 years.
I would probably give him overall for the 8 years, probably a C. I have to be fair. I think that he did decent. I'm not giving him a B, not giving him an A, but giving him a C. But and I don't think that he would deserve an F or a D either.
Uh-huh.
So well, I would say a C.
All right. So let me ask you, what is one thing that he did that comes to mind that you would disagree with the most? One decision that he made or one policy that he came up with?
Well, he made a huge promise to the illegals, right? To the and I know there's a bunch of Mexican people that are probably listening to this. But I know that he did promise that he would basically, come up with a bill to legalize or try to legalize, those 11 million people that we talk about all of the time, and he never did it, and that's a huge disappointment. And I think that most of us, or at least someone like me, I'm very, very disappointed that he, I just didn't see him actually. Wanting to get it done. And that was a huge disappointment at the same time.
I gotcha. Well, we're running out of time here. Was there any concluding thoughts you wanted to put in favor?
No, that's
in
it.
Favor?
Like, okay. No, that's it. Like I said, the only thing would be just on the, for the trimmers, I do highly appreciate that, but there were other disappointments.
I gotcha. Thanks for the call, Carlos. Happy 2017.
Likewise.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right, folks, got it from Carlos there. I think there's a lot of disappointment. And I mean, look, to be honest, I blame Obama. Have you ever seen a person who was taken out of high school and they're put into sports and they just implode, I think Obama did have a lot of talent, could give a good speech, was charming. He's got a... he didn't in disagreement with Chris Matthews, he didn't test his way to the top of Harvard Law Review. He was placed there. But nonetheless, he was in Harvard. He graduated. He's obviously not a stupid person, but I think he was an example of a kid who's taken out of high school and he's put in the NBA or he's put in Major League Baseball and he fails. He fails because he doesn't know what he knows. He doesn't know what he doesn't know. He doesn't have the experience. He didn't develop his own real unique brand of politics. And he was worshipped, and the people who worshipped him did a grave disservice to America, and now we're all paying for it, and Obama's going to go down, I believe, is a major failure and a giant disappointment to the left. And it is to... I agree with Obama on one thing. It's not his fault that the party fell apart. It's all of these self-righteous Democrats who worshipped him into office. 6:59, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. We'll be back. I got a ton of stuff in the second hour. I do have a special little segment here. Didn't plan on this, but it strikes me as the right thing to do in honor of those people who are infuriated about Trump. I want to be sensitive, and the segment is called How to Move to Canada.
Hello, folks. A lot of Americans are talking about moving to Canada. If Trump gets in power, if Trump becomes the president, they're gone. They're going up north. And I call BS on that. I don't see it happening. But on the off chance some of them are being honest, I'd like to tell you a little bit about our fair land so you can figure it out, okay? Let's start here where my elbow is, okay? All of this stuff here, this is the East Coast. I have nothing to tell you about the East Coast. No, no one's ever really been around there. That's founded by Scots, Nova Scotia, right? New Scotland. And they used to have cod as a big thing to fish, but the cod disappeared. We don't know if the environmentalists were right or what happened there, but the whole East Coast here, the whole East Coast, no jobs, pretty rough. That's why the Trailer Park Boys is so funny. That goes on near Halifax there. Now, the other funny thing about the East Coast is the Underground Railroad ended there. So there's a little bit of racial tension there. In fact, they used to have a place called Africaville, right, where the Underground Railroad ended up. And that was not a real Underground Railroad, by the way. So, yeah, a lot of fishing done. If you call, like, say you're on welfare in Canada and you call them up, then you'll be talking to a Newfie. We used to make fun of them. If you're from Newfoundland, we make them Newfie jokes. And Stompin' Tom Connors is from there. It seems like a wonderful place, and it's probably worth checking out, but no one's ever been. And if you move there, I doubt you're ever going to be able to get a job or make any money. Maybe if you do remote stuff, like you're an internet guy, then maybe you could move there. I don't know. Seems like it might be a little chilly. That brings us to Quebec. Now, you see this whole red thing here? This is a...
All right. So, anyway, an introduction for how to find Canada on a map, which would be helpful. Now, here we go. Moving to Canada, Jim Gaffigan style.
You say you're leaving for Canada if your candidate is defeated? Jim Gaffigan has some thoughts about that.
I'm moving to Canada.
I've heard Americans say that. If one of these candidates wins the presidential election, they're moving to Canada? Well, given the possibility that half the U.S. population may move to Canada, I'm here to give my soon-to-be former Americans a summary of what they can expect of their new home in the Great White North. I should clarify, I know very little about Canada, because I'm American. But anyway, here goes. I've been lucky enough to visit Canada a handful of times, and I love it. Well, everyone loves Canada. Disliking Canada is strange, and probably some type of indication you have a mental problem. I don't like Canada or puppies. Can't stand either. Canada has universal health care. Canadians love hockey and they eat poutine. If you're unfamiliar with poutine, it is French fries covered in gravy and cheese curds. Now, I eat unhealthy. In fact, some would argue I've built a career on eating unhealthy. But to me, poutine is, well, irresponsible. I don't want to die. But poutine is delicious. Whenever I've eaten poutine, I've actually heard my heart say, "Are you mad at me? Did I do something to anger you?" My brain will chime in, "It's fine, it's fine. There's going to be some sweating." Well, there's going to be a lot of sweating. Bowels, you can have the week off. Canadians also love leaves. Well, I think they do. Canadians have a leaf on their national flag, which would lead one to believe Canadians love leaves. I don't know why there is a leaf on the Canadian flag or how that happened. Hey, why don't we put a leaf on the flag, huh? Why? Well, you know, that's what makes Canada unique. We got leaves. Other countries have leaves. No, they don't. Of course, it's a maple leaf on the flag. I'm not sure if that's about a love of maple leaves or maple syrup. I hope it's not the syrup, because that makes even less sense. Hey, you know that thing we used to put on pancakes when we were kids? What if we built our national identity around that? Anyway, that's all I know about Canada. After the election, when some of you move to Canada, can you do me a favor and find out why they have a leaf on the Canadian flag? Thanks.
All right, and here is 28 Americans, no celebrities applied for Canada to move to Canada after the election. Here we go. In our segment, how to move to Canada after the election.
Want to move to another country, right? Why would you want to move to another country? It's nice to go visit other countries, like go up to Canada, get some poutine, you know, and get some good Canadian beer once in a while, but not to move there. But you remember during the election season, there were a number of celebrities that came out and said, "Look, if Donald Trump wins this election, that's it. We're out of here."
There they are right there. Rosie, you know, who else is on there?
John Stewart. Yeah, Whoopi.
Miley Cyrus.
Barbara Streisand. You know, all the hits.
Cher.
Yep. But this morning,
I heard Rosie O'Donnell applied for a grazing permit in Canada.
Well, actually, Cher said she was going to move to Jupiter. Remember that?
Oh, that's true. She's moved to her
own planet. When did that space mission start? Well, it turns out Canada was asked about this. Hey, how many have headed over there?
And they say only 28 Americans have applied for Trump-related. Is there such a thing as Trump-related refugee status? Is that a
Apparently.
Real thing?
That's a new thing in their government.
Come on.
So,
and
hey,
none of them, though, have come from Hollywood.
I was just going to say, 28 did follow through with their word, but
yeah.
No one that was a well-known person, a celebrity that
right.
talked so publicly about it, no one actually followed through on that yet, at least.
Right. Whoopi's staying. Yeah.
Turns out celebrities are full of hot air.
It's shocking.
Breaking news. Let's get a Fox News alert on that.
28
one.
Of them.
28.
But, you know, they promised, though. They said, absolutely, I'm going to move.
Well, they promised
it wasn't a joke.
People.
It was very real. So.
There's always a promise. They always care a lot more than you
but
do.
But then they looked at the weather report.
Right? Care.
Like, it's like, what, 4 degrees? Hey, Rick, how warm is it in Canada right now?
Like minus 30 in a lot of it.
Right. Cold. And they're like, you know, maybe August.
Hollywood is a little
maybe LA is
right
a little
now.
Bit better for me.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we will stay on the story if we hear any updates.
When it hits over 30, we'll let you know.
All right. So not a lot of people moved to Canada, you know, but I mean, I think it would be a great idea if Rosie O'Donnell moved to Canada because we'd have a lot more room down here. But that's just kind of an observation. But not that I don't love Rosie, of course. And she has a house, and then she bought the house next door. She lives in a suburb, and she's got all these kids that she adopted with one of her various wives. And so the house next door, she goes over there to smoke marijuana and do her art, because as a celebrity, you've got to have painting or something else to fall back on. Here's from TMZ. Fleeing day for celebs who vowed to move to Canada. This is from yesterday.
Day. Donald Trump is our president. And a lot of you said you were going to leave the country if he got elected. So, time to put up or shut up. Hey guys, it's Gary. So, as you know, if you are watching this, Donald Trump is our president. This is real. This is not a test. It's actually happened.
This is a month old.
You see a very tumultuous campaign, to say the least, between Donald and Hillary. And more so than the Obama campaign, this is a very celebrity-driven, campaign, especially for Hillary's side. Lots of outspoken celebrities. And it got to the point where, you know, celebrities, notable people were saying that if and when Donald Trump got elected president, they would leave the country, they would leave the planet. I mean, they were getting ready to get on rocket ships. They were getting out of here. Some of the big names, Sam Jackson. Sam Jackson was very vocal about not being a part of this country if Donald Trump was in charge. Lena Dunham was another one. Lena said she'd go to Canada, and I'm sure Canada would be happy to have her. But we haven't heard anything from her yet, so we'll see exactly what she decides. Miley Cyrus was a big one. Miley said she would definitely leave the country if Donald got elected. Now, since last night, Miley has changed her tune a little bit. She put out a message, a very sorrowful, is that a word? A very sad, tearful message. She will support Donald Trump going forward. You know, he is our president now, and it's time to hop on board. As for the rest of you, Rosie O'Donnell, Stephen King. I love Stephen King. I hope he stays. Larry Flint. We need Larry Flint to stay. Al Sharpton, Dev Campbell, Raven Simone. I do like Raven. No? Raven's the worst. Bye, Raven. If you want to see the full list, go check out TMZ.com, where we have it posted with a nice photo gallery. And if you were planning on moving out of the country, you better do it soon, because there's probably going to be a run to the Canadian border real soon.
Well, the great news is you can always move to Canada. Well, even you can even do it like Rosie O'Donnell. Apply for a grazing permit before you move, just to make sure that, you know, in case they don't have McDonald's up there. 7:16, Kelly O'Connell, take a break and come back and talk about the confirmation, the delightful confirmation process in which a sitting senator is going to be accused of being a bigger racist than who's a famous American racist? Bull Connor. George Wallace, a couple of Democrats, by the way. Anyway, 7:16, we'll be right back.
Edge is the edge.
And 523-1450 to call in. It's AM Las Cruces. You've arrived. You don't have to leave. You can hang out here.
Dust and dust. If the brown whiskey don't kill him, then his woman must.
heroes the one that boy time and time again. Yeah, you're holding a losing hand and you're playing a losing game.
Well, there's a lot of important things to focus on today, and one of them is Barbara Streisand's reaction to Meryl Streep. And Barbara Streisand is a person who is very liberal and is considered to be highly, highly talented. Here she's talking about, just briefly, don't want you to lose your appetite for breakfast, but here we go.
With us now on the phone is a very special guest, someone who's been very active in politics, of course, and very concerned about the direction politics are heading in this country right now, Barbara Streisand. Barbara, thank you for joining us. What did you think and feel when you watched Meryl Streep last night talk about a man who's going to be our president mocking someone's disability?
I thought that she said what she said beautifully. And it's easy enough to see the video online of Trump mocking. You just showed it, actually. And I completely agree with Meryl. It was a heartbreaking moment and so beneath the dignity of the presidency, let alone any respectful person. I mean, what we need more in this world, I think, is kindness. And
how kind do you think most of these celebrities are to the average person? Just asking.
Common decency and what he did and how he reacts and how he has the need to talk back and insult anybody who doesn't agree with him. And that's pretty disgraceful.
What do you make of the critique that Meryl Streep made last night, that you can push this thing and it becomes the norm? That it's like Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the senator, once said,
Yeah, who cares? Trump insulted somebody, so it becomes the norm for America. All right, so here is, I have to say, 100 days of resistance to Trump. That's what it means to be a celebrity these days.
You're watching The Last Word. Back with us, Michael Moore. The other question I want to ask you looking forward, what are your inauguration plans?
Well, I'm going to be in D.C., as I think hundreds of thousands of people are going to be there for the big Women's March on Washington. Women's March on Washington, that's the one. If you want to go online, they're womensmarch.com, or on Twitter, it's @womensmarch. This is the thing everyone is coming to. women, men, everybody. But it's going to be not the day of the inauguration, it's the day after.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sort of the first full day of the Trump era.
You realize that if America was directed, was governed by these celebrities and their far leftism, it'd be a giant concentration camp, right? I mean, isn't that what always happens when leftism goes in?
I can't even believe I said those words. The potentially short-lived Trump era, but it'll be Saturday, January 21st, Women's March on Washington.
For those of us who've grown up on your work, who many people take inspiration from the way you tell stories and the way you do your work, what do you say to people who look at this right now? And there are many, and I hear from them, who say, it seems hopeless, depending on their views.
Mm.
What's the point? What's the point of a march? Or what's the point of doing anything right now?
Oh, well, first of all, Trump gets upset if there's 10 people outside Trump Tower. He tweets about it. Unfair. The day after he wins, right? He's won. And he goes, protesters down on the street. There's like 10 people. Unfair. It's like, it's that, right?
Yeah.
No, he did that. That's the word he used. And it's like, wow. What's he going to think if there's 100,000 or 500,000? I mean, no, it's so important that we all, everybody who can go there. It's a weekend. Come on. You know, it's down south. It's in D.C. You know, there won't be a lot of snow. but no, it's this will have an effect. We have to throw everything at this. This
guy is so spastic.
Man is slightly unhinged, if I can say that. And he's a malignant narcissist.
Speaking of which.
So he cares very much about what people think of him. He wants to be the popular guy, and he's going to be very upset if there's a lot of people there. And then beyond that, beyond the 21st, the people that Rachel had on the other night, all the other groups, Bo Willimon's got a thing going. He could go online.
All right, so they're going to do 100 days of resistance, but it's going to be 1,000 days, right? It's going to be 4 years of resistance. Because why? What do these people stand for? Seriously, you obviously don't stand for democracy or republicanism. You don't like the way we do things here. So please feel free to go to Canada. We do have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who is this?
It's Chuck. I just got back from out of state, so I'm picking up your program.
Welcome back, Chuck. Thanks for calling in, man. I hope it's the first thing that you did when you crossed the border, but what's going on?
Actually, the first thing I did when I got here was get some sleep.
Sorry. God bless you. God bless you.
Well, there's a few things. I came back and walked right into the news about Sytel leaving the city. That was made it a happy new year for me. And the fact that apparently the mayor and the city council doesn't seem to bother him a bit.
Well, did you hear the show yesterday?
No, I didn't. I missed it.
All right. So I called out and asked everybody to call up the mayor, and ask if he'd do a Trump and see what it would take to get Sytel to stay here. And the mayor made one of the most surreal statements I have ever seen anybody in elected office state, which is covering a lot of ground. He said, well, it's a perfect turnkey operation for anybody who's interested. We've got the workers. We've got the managers. We've got the building. We need is a business to walk in there and take it over. Talk about somebody who is totally disconnected from reality. Are there really a bunch of businesses, a bunch of corporations out there waiting for a business to get empty and can sweep in and take it over?
Well, he apparently is totally missing the point of, if there are things that made Sytel leave, are those things going to stop another company from coming in?
Okay.
If you don't change the atmosphere, who wants to be here?
Well, the atmosphere must be poisonous, because when you say it's one of the biggest employers in the town, and it happens to be a call center, are we going to be the international or the national headquarters of the call centers? We're not going to do that, even, because apparently we don't have what it takes to even make that list. But the sad thing is that this guy doesn't really seem to care. He puts a lot of his energy, if he has any, into talking down to people, which I've never understood how that is a part of a leadership personality. But You know, this idea that he doesn't need to worry about Sitel. I mean, at some point, don't you need some businesses to pay taxes so everybody else can be on living on the state? I mean, what's the model here?
Well, I think Sitel's leaving because of this wonderful thing that the city did for workers, which was bump the minimum wage up. And it's very hard for an operation with that many employees to justify the huge amount of money that adds up to, because not only are you going to be paying the increase in wages, and they've got to raise everybody because your supervisors and your senior people aren't going to want to be paid the minimum like the new person. So everybody gets a bump in wages to some extent. And then and people say, well, it's only so much money increase. Yeah, but the business also has to pay state unemployment, federal unemployment, work comp. Then there's you've got your other insurances that go in there. A lot of things are attached directly to your wage. I know this. I owned a business for 15 years. So, you know, when they did minimum wage increase, I not only had to factor in the amount of the increase and how much I had to raise everybody up, including my senior personnel, but I had to factor in my increased charge to the customer, how all the attached costs.
Yeah.
And for me, insurance was a major thing.
Well, here's the thing, though. I mean, when the Sun News called him up and asked him about it, he said, well, it's not the fault of the minimum wage, which he was, I guess, a supporter of. But, I mean, this guy, the mayor, it's a symbolic position. So, I mean, the mayor has told people before. I've had several different people that didn't know each other have said to me, you know, I talked to the mayor and he informed me this is a no growth area. I mean, could you imagine having a hospital with a maternity ward with a bunch of babies and incubators with a sign no growth area? I mean, to me, it's a death sentence to say that an area is no growth. That's crazy. That's absolutely insane. That, you know, what to not grow means that you're going to put out, like you say, an atmosphere or a regime which does not encourage growth. If you're not growing, you're dying.
Well, I don't know. The guy, I think he's got this attitude that he's omnipotent because he keeps getting reelected, and he's totally missing the realization that his elections, and so are the same thing with some of the county and city people, the city and county boards, they're elected in off-year elections, and all they need is a certain number of people who are faithful followers to come in and vote for him. So he's been reelected more than once, so now he thinks he's the big frog in the pond. And what he doesn't realize is he's not a big frog. It's just that the water's so shallow.
Well, he is at the shallow end of the gene pool, I'll give you that. But I just think it's tragic. Did this guy not learn anything from Trump? You know, look, if you're a leader and you're not helping bring prosperity to your city, you're helping kill it. I mean, whether people like Trump or not, he's gotten engaged with the business community and he's put out either directly or indirectly a message. We're for growth. We're for capitalism. We want your business here. We don't want you to go to Mexico or China or any other place. Please stay here. Please grow your business here. And people are responding. And I mean, why can't this mayor, this so-called mayor, do that? I mean, these people act like they're living up on Mount Olympus and the rest of us just have to suffer. They act like whether we have an economy here is part of some sort of a natural cycle like sunspots or, it's, you know, I'm amazed. I'm amazed that more people are not furious at this guy.
Well, I mean, it's going to take something to make them furious, because otherwise they're not going to get off their dead rear ends and go vote in an off-year election. And that is what he survives on. And it's going to take a catastrophe for him to have turnover in the mayor's position in the city council. And, it's just not going to happen easily.
Let me ask you this, Chuck, if you were an executive on a major corporation – with franchises and you flew to this town, you know, flew to El Paso and then you drove across this city and you saw all of the empty commercial space, there must be 1,000 empty buildings here, would you really say this is the place that my business needs to be?
Oh, heck no. Other than the fact that people are moving in to live here from out of state because they think it's more cost effective, there's really nothing going on in this town. It's dead. I hate to see it. You know, I'm a transplant, and I can remember Las Cruces as being a place I loved to live, and now I'm, even the state of New Mexico. I'm just not sure that I'm going to stay here. I'm watching the state go down the tubes.
Yeah, and I mean, the mayor threw himself into getting the Oregon Mountains handed over to the federal government. What did that do to help build up the economy here? How can you have a city with no economy? Somebody told me something interesting. We were talking about this, and they said, well, Silver City has got some building going on. And I said, what are they building? And the guy said, well, actually, they seem to be putting in cemeteries there. And I'm like, are you kidding? This is a serious conversation that I had. And I'm like, oh, my God. I mean, it's so bad that apparently Silver City is marketing itself as the cemetery capital of the state. But,
move here forever.
Yes, exactly. Move here. Don't leave. You they can't kick you out. I just, I'd like to call for some leadership from instead of bringing in a bus system that, according to Ben Rawson last month, had something like 120 or 130 empty passages. You've got this giant bus driving up and down the road, totally empty 130 times. I understand you can spend money if you come up with the dream of the utopian city with buses and everything, but how about we build an economy and then celebrate the rise in the standard of living here? Half the people here under the poverty level, a quarter of the people here under the poverty level, a quarter of the people just above it. Half the city is in dire poverty, and the mayor must be just laughing his way to his office every day. I don't get it.
Well, I mean, the attitude on the city council as a whole has been pretty bad. Remember, we've got one councilor who sat there and laughed and bragged about how when she was in a legal position with a legal organization that she just scared the pants off of businesses, that they were terrified to see her coming. That is not exactly the kind of attitude that is going to cause business growth, produce jobs, and a healthy economy.
That's ignorance. That's the ignorance of leftism, of socialism that's trying to take over, that is trying to take over this country. Look, I got to take a break here. Anything else?
No, I had a couple other things, but I'll let you get on to other folks. I can call back some other time.
Thanks, Chuck. Thanks for calling in. Have a great day. I mean, look, Mayor, they're not the Sitel's supposed to be moving until not supposed to be moving out of the city for a couple of months. Could you meet with them? Could you ask them what they need? Would you care if if it was red tape oriented I realize I'm talking to somebody who doesn't really care. Doesn't seem to care anyway. 737 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. We'll be back.
Then when you say you got to pay, and you gotta be one day. Love, but when you do, the groundhog will be shaking your head.
All right. So various headlines, the president is raising money for the Democrats going out. That's one thing that he seemed to be fairly effective at is fundraising. But you kind of expected more out of it. Obama, don't blame me for the Democrat demise. Talking to George Stephanopoulos, he said it's not his fault. All right, here is Mitch McConnell on this upcoming confirmation round for these, you know, Obama got all his confirmations pretty much. Should the same thing happen to Trump?
We're here on this very chilly morning with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who is making his first appearance on a Sunday show since the election. Welcome, Mr. Leader.
Good morning.
Let's start with the Russian efforts to meddle in the U.S. election. Yeah. You've strongly condemned those efforts. Why do you think Donald Trump has not?
Oh, look, I think the best way to look at the president-elect's attitude toward the Russians is to look at the incoming national security leaders, General Mattis, General Kelly, Congressman Pompeo, Senator Coates. None of these are people who are in any way conflicted about the view that the Russians are not our friends and are a big problem. I don't think it's all that unusual for a new president to want to get along with the Russians. I remember George W. Bush having the same hope. My suspicion is these hopes will be dashed pretty quickly. The Russians are clearly a big adversary, and they demonstrated it by trying to mess around in our election.
Do you think, given the findings of the intelligence agencies, the most recent briefing on Friday to President-elect Trump, that he should say sort of, I agree now with what you found, that there's any damage that's been done by his skepticism of these findings and with the intelligence agencies?
Look, I'm not going to critique his performance. What I will tell you is that I accept the what the intelligence community has unanimously agreed to, that they were trying to affect the election, that they naively, in my view, thought that somehow they'd be advantaged if Donald Trump were to be elected. I think that was a bad bet. And that it really, in the end, made no difference, that there's no evidence whatsoever that it changed the outcome of the election.
Let me switch to Obamacare. Why do you think they were naive in wanting Donald Trump?
Well, look at the national security team.
Yeah.
I mean, these are clear-eyed people who understand fully.
Well, look, I don't have time for this because, I'd rather not take time for this. The statement from the head of the Senate is that the left needs to grow up. Now, we got to do some weather here. Let's do some weather and come back. I've got some interesting information from the guy that put together the McAfee Virus Hunter, the security system that a lot of people use that is, I think, comes as free on Microsoft computers, stating that there is no evidence that the Russians were even involved in the hacking, which I thought you might find notable. 7:45, Kelly O'Connell will be right back. Here's local weather. All right, so folks, we've got here. Here is this thing from McAfee. I thought you would find this notable. This guy is considered one of the, you know, he basically invented the virus hunter, the security system.
Despite the recent allegations against Russia, the FBI never accessed the hacked servers of the DNC in their investigation. For more on the hearing, I'm joined tonight by John McAfee, cybersecurity legend and developer of the McAfee antivirus, and also the CEO of MGT. Great to have you with us tonight, John. I appreciate your time. Characterize what you heard today on Capitol Hill. How conclusive is it?
Well, I'm going to be very frank with you and the American public. I think that today, the most deceptive propaganda to date was perpetrated on the American public. The data that was presented, the evidence, was culled from a thing called the Grizzly Step Report, put together jointly by Homeland Security and the FBI. In there are four facts which they claim prove that Russia did this act. It was utter nonsense. The information was, number one, Russian language was found in the malware. Number two, a Cyrillic keyboard was used. By the way, the forensic science can now tell what type of keyboard was used to develop a piece of malware. Number three, the compiler, that is one of the piece of software that compiles the code so that it can execute, always dates and timestamps. It said that the timestamps were in a time zone for the business hours of Moscow and St. Petersburg and other places in Russia. And then number four, that the IP address pointed to a Russian address. Now, let me go through this and try to make it very simple for the American people. If the CIA wanted to hack Russia, the things you would not do is you would not include the English language in your software, because that would then exclude everybody except English-speaking nations. You would certainly not use a keyboard that everybody knows that the CIA uses, whatever keyboard they use. You'd have them use a Chinese keyboard or something else. You would certainly remove the date and timestamp from the program so that you couldn't tell what business hours or what zone you were in when it was compiled. And number four, you would absolutely not have an IP address that points to you. Because seriously, if Russia declared war on us because we hacked Russia, and the head of the CIA or the intelligence committee came to Congress and they said, well, what happened? Oh, well, you know, we didn't have time to remove the English language. We didn't have time to remove the date stamp. We didn't have time. The guy that couldn't use the Chinese keyboard, so we gave him our regular keyboard. And, you know, it was my wife's birthday, so I could not remove the IP address. Please, yeah. That person would be scheduled for suicide. So this is what
John,
they are asking.
Does Donald Trump have enough room to challenge this? I mean, the way you present it tonight, this doesn't sound credible. It doesn't sound conclusive. It sounds rather flimsy the way you've presented it.
Well it's not just flimsy. It's either this. It's propaganda intended to incite the American people to anger toward Russia for some reason, or our intelligence community is so ignorant and naive that they should all be replaced. And here's the kicker. Here is why it cannot possibly be an organized nation state. Because the hack on the DNC used a piece of malware a year and a half old, and there have been many updates since then. Do you actually believe the Russian intelligence services spend all their time improving their malware, and then when they do an important attack, go, well, I used that thing from a year ago. It only had a few bugs. No. This was done by an independent one-person kid that downloaded the software. And by the way, the software came from two different organizations they're claimed to be two different organizations that are related to the Russian government. That's absolutely false. They're called APT-28 and APT-29, and those designations come from FireEye, people who watch all the hacking groups. In truth, it's only one organization, and it's composed not just of Russians, but of people, kids all around the world. You can go on the dark web, download the software, hack somebody, And so this kid had obviously downloaded it a year and a half ago and I had not bothered to update it. Please, this is not an organized hack and certainly not a nation state that did this.
Pretty fascinating, huh? I mean, I'm convinced that they have not made their case. 7:53, we'll be right back. I have one more connection between Trump and Putin that you're going to find fascinating.
Didn't he ramble? He ramble all around in and out of town.
Julian Assange claiming that the U.S. government is currently destroying documentation to cover up things that it has done wrong or is embarrassed about. In the meanwhile, terror suspects in Germany might be, or in Europe might be, given electronic trackers. Now, what if this guy who claimed to be working for ISIS in came in and shot all the people up in Florida? What if he had been put on a terror tracker? What if they gave him some sort of a thing after he admitted that he was mentally ill. Now here is Trump, International Tea Party movement connecting to Russia as a potential ally against Islam. Maybe that's the Trump Putin connection.
And whether or not they succeeded is not the issue. Changing the subject is not the issue. Mm. The attempt itself is what was being punished.
David, what do you
think? Yeah, this thing is happening on two levels. The first level is the gravitational pull of Donald Trump's ego, which is like Jupiter coming through the solar system around which everything must revolve. And he cannot admit that he won this election with anybody else's help. And so he just wants to say, it's me, it's me. But to me, the more important thing is a shift in strategies that I think a lot of people in the Trump administration, notably Steve Bannon and others, want to do, which is all through all our lifetimes, Republicans and Democrats have basically supported the post-World War II international order and seen Russia or the Soviet Union as a threat to that. Bannon and others in the International Tea Party movement do not support that order. They see Russia as a potential ally of nationalist populists against Islam. And they want it, that would be a fundamental shift in American foreign policy if we're more pro-Russia than we are pro-NATO. And to me, one of the interesting things in this whole administration will be Bannon versus Trump. That is to say, a guy with an ideology versus a guy with no attention span who sees a lot of shiny objects.
Rick, what do you make of that?
Well, anyway, what I take away from that is that we talk about this International Tea Party movement. It's the international movement to get rid of the elites that are destroying the world, that Obama is part of, that is Merkel is part of, these people who claim that all individuals are part of a human family that has to be given a place to live wherever they decide they want to go, that wants to put these people on welfare, that looks for international control by bodies like the United Nations, that is going to destroy the earth and take away all of our liberty, and instead fighting back to control the land that we live in so we can protect ourselves and grow our freedom and our economic prosperity and our religious liberty. Thanks for tuning in. Kelly O'Connell, have a great day. I'll see you in 22 hours. Ciao. AM Las Cruces.